kick it off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. I need a little bit of a palate cleanse, and I went and watched the end of the 2010 Ohio State game. Because Bob's brought me down with all these missed opportunities. You've made me feel like a real schmohawk. A real dumbass for booking this flight to Detroit, Bob. You made me sit here and think about how we're 1-8 in our 9 previous Sweet 16 games. I've been at a lot of the losses. Enough of the losses to last me a lifetime, Bob. I was at Madison Square Garden last year. I saw what happened against FAU. I was in Indianapolis against Michigan. I know that wasn't the Sweet 16, but I was there for that. I was in Indianapolis. We lost to Michigan in 2014. Another Sweet 16 loss. Why am I putting myself out here, Bob?
Because you believe. This is my point is this is an opportunity. This is it, man.
Law of averages.
Yeah, right? It's kind of what you said in the last segment.
Main, baby.
Yeah, we got it. It's bound to happen. This is it. This is the time.
It always comes down to me of just what if. What if it does happen? I want to be there if it happens. I love going to watch my teams in big games, but I ain't had a lot of success lately. For a while, I had a good run. My team was taking care of business. The last calendar year, it ain't been great for your boy in person. Really going back to that Georgia-Tennessee game in Athens a year and a half ago. Really, it was all downhill after that. Haven't gotten me a big road win since. Yikes. Borderlining I'm bordering bad luck guy.
Just think about how it's going to feel if you're there and they win. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, that's what got my dumb ass to Kansas City in 2020 to watch us play the Chiefs in the AFC Championship.
It's going to pay off, Sean. You just got to keep hammering. It's like that little meme with the dude in the diamonds in the mine, you know? You just got to keep going.
That's what I was just thinking about when you said that, actually. I can't turn around yet.
Mm-hmm.
My treasure is there. My treasure is there.
You'll get it someday.
Speaking
that's
of
like
treasure.
80% of the fun of being a sports fan is like kind of getting through the suck, you know?
Just high fives with your friends at the game.
Yeah.
Just hugs. Being happy.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to watch it on TV, but
you think you'll cry if they get to the Final Four?
Do I think I'll cry? No, man. I don't think I'll cry.
I don't know, man.
What would make you cry? What sporting event? What would need to happen with your teams to make you cry?
Losing on a buzzer beater?
In terms of happiness.
Tears of joy. That made me cry.
I think a Titans Super Bowl would make me cry.
The Titans winning a Super Bowl or making a Super Bowl?
Yeah, winning the Super Bowl.
Would make you cry?
Yeah, probably.
I mean, not like sob.
No,
but,
just
tear
like
up a
couple.
Little.
Yeah,
I understand what you
the
guys are
the no Sean Marino like national anthem.
Did you get a little misty at all when Josiah was down there on senior day?
I was in line to get a drink.
Oh, that's right. You did miss it. You came
I missed
and saw
the senior
that.
Day stuff. I saw it last year. It's fine. No, senior day doesn't make me misty. Senior day doesn't make me misty. I don't think there's anything my team could do success wise that would make me cry. I really don't. Now, I also don't have kids.
You'll cry at movies, but like, for how much time you put into your sports teams, that
cry
won't make
at movies
you cry?
When people die or like friends. I mean,
it's a fake movie.
It's fake. It's not even real.
They're real feelings, though.
So is real feelings of winning a title if one of your sports teams
but
win.
But the reason I cried during movies is I could see myself in those scenarios.
You would be in the scenario if you won a title.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't be the one winning the title. I'm not the one hitting the shot. I'm talking about like when I see, you know, someone get their heart broken or someone die or something, you can relate to that in movies because you could be heartbroken. You can die. You could have a friend have a moment or, you know, a special moment with another human or an animal or something. I'm not a championship-level player, so I'm not going to feel that
you're
it can happen to me.
You're a championship-level fan.
Well, that's fine. I understand that.
That's
but
the same
like,
thing.
It's not the same. It's
yeah,
not,
it is.
It's not. Being a championship-level player and a championship-level fan is not the same thing, Sam. It's not.
Coach Polinski, when he comes on, if we win a title, he will definitely say that the fans deserve it just as much as they do.
Well, he will because he loves the fans.
Yeah.
He will.
He loves you, John.
Speaking about
G-Rag! You're my boy! That's what I'm going to do on Friday night around midnight when we advance.
You should have worn it. We need a G-Rag t-shirt.
G-Rag!
We're gonna see.
We did it, baby!
How loose will he be today? I don't know. We could get a lot of patent answers today, and I would respect that just because they got some serious business in front of them. So
yeah, it's kind of crazy to me he's still doing the appearance the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I always
pay him. He's not getting any money for doing this.
And I always reach out to him ahead of time, like even like last week, and I did it this week. Like, hey man, totally understand if you got some pretty big business in front of you. And he's like, oh, I'm there, man. 9:20, let's do it.
Bob's just a winner, man.
I appreciate that. And
Bob knows how to convince people how to do stuff. Bob knows how to land what he's after, except that guy from the Fox Sports 1, the play-by-play guy that stood us up yesterday. Did he ever reply to you?
Not a word. Not a word. He must be busy.
A jerk.
He was interviewing players I saw yesterday.
He's at the East Regional. Yeah. So,
he can take the time to reply, but whatever. Bob will get him eventually if he wants him, because that's what Bob does. And, you know, your relationship with G-Rex got him coming on here at 9:20, and we'll check in. From Detroit, maybe if me and Greg embrace.
That would make you cry.
Yeah, maybe if me and Greg embrace.
You guys spot each other, point at each other. Like, he's like, you, man, I'm looking at you.
Thank you for the platform this season, John. We did it. We couldn't do it without you. Maybe I'd get a little teary-eyed there. But no, I really don't think there's anything in sports that would make me cry. Bob, are you a crier at sports?
I'm telling you, the senior day thing with Josiah, I got a little misty. Like, not like I'm bawling or anything else, but it was like, you know, watching Josiah get moved like he did, that was awesome.
When Big Zach Edey finally breaks through and makes his Final Four, Bob's going to be there.
Nah.
Tears streaming down his face.
They've been to Final Fours, so.
Zach Edey ain't.
No, that's true. That's true.
Just think about last year. They lost to a 16 seed, but he didn't quit. He just worked his tail off, man. And there's Bob's crying just thinking about it.
Okay, speaking of moving someone to tears, did you see any of this video of Steph Curry last night?
He was almost moved to angry tears.
Yeah, that's what I think he was. Did you see this, Sam?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, Draymond gets ejected like 3 minutes into the game. And you know, Golden State's fighting for a play-in spot. They're probably going to be in the play-in at least, but
I don't know. They're not far ahead of Houston.
Yeah, and what I saw there is I do think he was moved to tears, and it is frustration, John. I think he's kind of like, man, I have stood by this dude forever, and I don't know. It was something to see. I was kind of surprised. I watched it multiple times just because I couldn't believe what I was seeing. But it's like you figure he's essentially carrying that team, and there it's also maybe some realization of, you know, beginning of the end for that team. You know what I mean? As far as the era of dominance is definitely over. They may not even make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, you could say the Lakers and LeBron kind of ended that last year.
Yeah,
just with how easily they disposed them in that playoff series, and then coming back. They've had flashes at times where it's like, oh, the young guys are playing well. But, like, yeah, they still find themselves as the 10 seed, barely ahead, only a game ahead of Houston, who's on their heels. They might not even make, you know, the 10-team play-in tournament. But even if they do make the 10-team play-in tournament, they're going to have to win in L.A., who's just a terrible matchup for them, and then find a way to beat either Phoenix or Sacramento. So, like, yeah, I think Curry realizes that, like, hey, this isn't going well. And Curry may be planting some seeds to get out of there or to completely reshape that franchise. Like, I don't think it's a coincidence or an accident that they were reportedly, like, kicking the tires on LeBron around the trade deadline as he's trying to, like, really kind of change that franchise and change that roster, because I think that roster has gone as far as it's going to go between Klay not being near the same player and just all the stuff that surrounds Draymond. It seems like it has worn on Steph. Draymond Green, another face of Tennessee frustration. Picking on Grant Williams and knocking us out in the Elite Eight. It's all connected.
And then there's the tears that I would shed maybe out of laughter if we're seeing some people buying into the Joe Milton experience on his pro day.
Tears of laughter. Okay. I had tears of the anger and frustration variety, metaphorically speaking, whenever afterwards I saw his quotes after the pro day where he's like, yeah, it was really nice for me to be able to go under center here and go slow. He's like, I don't really like going fast.
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And I'm like, what? Excuse me? Like, we all know it. We saw it. But, like, what? It all lines up with what I saw on the football field last year, but like it was just another thing where I'm like, Josh Heupel, your whole offense is built on going super fast, and you have a quarterback that's like, I don't really like going fast. And it makes sense because we didn't go fast at all last year, and our offense wasn't very good last year. He does look so pretty on some of those throws, though. He really does look pretty on those throws. He is good at football. He's good at everything that comes with playing football other than playing football. He is good at everything else. Apparently, they say he's a great teammate. He's a great interview. He looks the part. He's athletic. He ran a 4.55. Like, I mean, he was fast. He is great at everything that comes with football other than actually playing football. If you've seen him play a game, you will not be fooled. But if you're just a scout that thinks as you can fix somebody that loves, you know, reclamation projects, adopt, don't shop. If you're that type of person, you're going to look and say, I could fix him. He just had bad coaching. No one's taking the time to really train this guy. I can get him coached up. I can get him trained. I could fix him. Third-round pick, Joe Milton.
That Adam Schefter video that got posted, which we were talking on the RTI thread yesterday, wondering where he got that because he wasn't.
No, he's definitely
wasn't
not
in Knoxville.
There.
So, no. He got it from someone. He didn't get it from us. But whoever you could hear the gnat sound after Milton throws that rainbow pass, you hear, yeah, that'll play. You know, I'm just like, oh my God, another one, another
plays
sucker,
in practice,
another
plays
sucker
in practice.
Being born, man.
Hey, our coach fell for it.
Yeah,
our coach fell for it. It's easy to get enamored.
Yeah, it does look great. It does look great. I mean, it looks like a superhero out there running around. I get it.
Do you think they did the pro day outside so they wouldn't, you know, like the Anthony Richardson throw to hit the ceiling last year was like intentional, but I think Milton just would have hit the ceiling like 5 times yesterday.
Well, also the practice field is only like 50 yards, right?
It's like 80, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was even shorter than that. I thought it was like 50, but okay.
Oh, you're saying the indoor one?
Yeah.
I think the outdoor ones are not fully 100.
Well, yeah, but I think the indoor ones are even shorter than that,
yeah.
I think.
I'm not sure about the indoor one.
But yeah, give him more space to really like launch it like you're saying.
Hey, I never imagined even at a UFL level that Jared Garantano would still be playing. So who knows, man?
When does that start?
I thought the first game was this weekend, like Saturday.
Kind of hankering for a little bit of football.
And I think it's like the defending champs from each of the two leagues that have
merged. A little Champions League action, huh? Yeah, Saturday, March 30th. A doubleheader.
I think they're going to play head-to-head is what I saw in the promotion.
10 players you may know in the UFL. A.J. McCarron, Matt Corral, Reuben Foster.
God, Matt
Corral. Reuben Foster, man, that's a tough one. He was nasty in college.
Eddie Lacy. Just kidding.
Remember Matt Corral at one point, there were some mock drafts that were having him like top 5. That was early, but still.
He busted us up.
Yeah.
Amari Rodgers. That's tough.
That's tough, yeah.
That's tough. Cause, I mean, he was what, like a third-round pick?
Yeah. I don't know. That kind of sounds a little high, but maybe not.
Pretty sure the Packers drafted him around that spot in the third round, and he was just awful. He was just awful with the Packers.
Third round. Yeah, he was bad, man.
He was a big-time prospect, obviously, that went to Clemson, and just, yeah, it's kind of sad. Hakeem Butler, I don't really know who that is. Scooby Wright, that's the Arizona guy.
Hakeem Butler was good at Iowa State, I believe.
Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah.
Darius Victor. So you're not really selling me on this CBS Sports when you give me the 10 names I know and, like, actually only know, like, 4. Oh, I know, like, 8 of them and actually care about, like, 3 of them or 2 of them.
Articles, like, 10 names we'll mention, 3 you might know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scooby Wright's not really moving the needle for me, but yeah, I do remember him. Yeah, I will not be watching that on Saturday. I'll either be celebrating, walking around the streets of Detroit with my head held high.
You gotta go into Greektown, man. Get some food in Greektown.
Yeah.
What's there?
There's just like great restaurants. I mean, I'll find the restaurant I went to. It's fantastic. I'll go back and look. We were there for the Detroit Auto Show a while back, and
how far is Greektown from downtown?
That's a good question. Well, it not far, not far.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'm thinking about when we were staying at the hotel to go to the auto show. That was at the convention center, and you take the people mover, is what they call it. It's like a tram, and it goes around, like you saw all the stadiums and everything else. So it's all relatively proximate.
If it was just me traveling by myself, or if I was in control, I'd be like, Bob, I'm going to be honest with you. There's no chance this happens where I go try anything outside of like just some wings at a bar or just like a regular restaurant.
You going to get a Coney dog?
But I'm traveling with people, and they might want to do that, so no, I might actually end up
no,
there.
No, it's like good. It's not funky food. I mean, it's amazing. It's
a
really
Coney
good.
Dog?
Yeah, they're famous for that there.
I thought Coney Island was famous for the Coney dog.
Detroit.
Yeah.
What is that? Just like a big hot dog with like, is that what a Coney dog is, right? With just the chili and everything on it? That's what I'm picturing. Probably not going to eat that. Going to leave the glizzies to someone else.
Iconic to Detroit.
I've been to Sonic before. I've eaten one of those. I get it.
Is this your first time in Detroit?
Outside of just like stopping at the airport, like in the connector.
You'll see a lot of stuff when you come in from the airport going towards downtown. It's rough, man. It is rough.
Coach Polinski checking in from Detroit. After the break, it's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Ever been the...
We are closing in on some very, very, very meaningful basketball games this weekend. It starts tonight with Sweet 16 play, but more notably for the Tennessee Vols, tomorrow night's not that far away. We're getting closer, and wanting to get a little bit of a look ahead, as we tend to do with our weekly guest, and we are so thankful that we have him making time for us at a busy, busy time of season for the Vols. Assistant Coach Greg Polinski joining us. Coach, how are you, my friend?
I'm great, fellas. How is everybody back in Knoxville?
Excited and ready to go. My flight in the morning, Coach, is at 5:30. I'll be headed to Detroit bright and early in the morning.
Okay. Get you a big Starbucks.
Yeah.
It's going to be a long night. You're right about that. Going to be a very long day.
It is a long one.
Yeah. So, thinking back, I'm sequencing this a little bit. You think back to the wars from last weekend, the first and second round, now looking ahead to Creighton. What I was so struck by was, obviously, the team struggled in terms of just making baskets. It was a hard, hard game. But what I saw that was really different, I think we all saw it, is, man, just so much perseverance, so much resilience. The defense buckled down, and here we are, you know, Sweet 16 still. From your perspective, is that how you guys are taking it? It's like, hey, got that behind us. Can't get much harder than that, and we still have some super hard games ahead of us. Is that how you prep for Creighton at this point? Obviously a really, really talented team.
Yeah, very talented team. To answer and then move into Creighton, it's pretty evident. Extremely proud of our team. A lesser group of guys might have given into that. Certainly wasn't the prettiest game aesthetically. In terms of making baskets, I think we were 3 of 25 from 3 and shot in the low 30s. I think you have to go back to 1997 to find a team that won doing that in the NCAA tournament on that volume of shots. So I think, you know, there's a lot to be proud of with the guys, because you can play poorly and shoot well, and most people will tell you, man, you guys played great. Well, you might not have, really. You might not have played real well, maybe not executed. But when you shoot the ball, it takes care of a lot of ills. And we didn't. That's obvious, right? That's the most obvious statement I can make. So to be able to, as you said, persevere, get through that game, I don't think we'll be able to do it again. I think that, you know, Creighton is a in our league, play somewhat like Alabama differently. They utilize the pass a lot more than the dribble, but really well coached. Run a lot of great actions, play very fast. We'll take the early three. So if we're not on our A game both ways, that'll be very difficult to beat. You know, they present a lot of challenges. very good, old, experienced, skilled. They got three fundamental things they can do that kind of sounds silly, but you would say, what would you want in any basketball player? They can pass, dribble, and shoot.
Just one last thing about the Texas game. I mean, it stood out, you know, just the perseverance, like you said. As a coach and as a coaching staff, is that type of win something to be more proud of? You know, checking the mental fortitude of your team? Or would you just prefer, like, hey, don't make me sweat. Let's just execute and knock some shots down? Because I do think you can come out of that game with a lot of confidence of making crunch time plays, you know, especially at the free throw line.
Yeah, no, I mean, we made some plays. There were some big shots. I mean, far and few between, but, you know, Josiah's three in the corner I thought was huge with 7 minutes to go, and bumped us up a little bit, and Lord knows on that night we needed, you know, any margin we could find. But I think we come out of that with a positive spin. That's, you know, it's so hard to win a game when you shoot that poorly. We got looks. We felt good about it. We're going to take those same looks. We have, you know, Coach says it all the time. I know it may not seem like it, but we feel like we have a good shooting team. Weapons, places we can go to score the ball. So, you know, to get that game behind us and hopefully not have a repeat, we'll take the defensive effort. We need to make some shots.
As we're looking ahead to Creighton tomorrow night, is there a team that Tennessee has played so far this year that reminds you the most of Creighton? And, you know, the matchup kind of similar that we could look at.
Yeah, I would say yes and no. So what I'd said just a little earlier was, in terms of tempo, offensive efficiency, they're sixth in the country in three-pointers made per game, fourth in offensive efficiency. I would say Alabama, because they play with speed, but they use the pass. You know, they get the ball to the court really quickly. They know exactly what they want to do with it. They do a variety of things out of transition that are difficult to guard. Really, like I said, an extremely well-coached team. I mean, it's no surprise. Coach McDermott's been doing this for years. They've been to Sweet 16s, Elite Eights. So, again, we'll have to be on our A game in order to have an opportunity to win this game tomorrow night.
It seemed like Oregon had a lot of success getting Kalkbrenner involved in screen action, and, you know, really kind of picking on him a little bit in the pick and roll and trying to draw him, of course, away from the basket. You know, he's tall. You don't want him down there next to the rim. Is that something that you guys have looked at and thought that maybe you could take away from the Oregon game? Because, you know, I've complimented Tennessee's pick and roll action and kind of playing more of the NBA style this year. I think Zakai and Dalton have both been really successful with that. And I think Jonas showed some real flashes, even against Texas, of being able to create kind of in that role man position and being able to, you know, find the pass to Josiah for the reverse layup and find shooters in the corners. Do you take a lot away from that Oregon game? Are you taking your own success from the season? Is, you know, the pick and roll and getting Kalkbrenner away from the rim, is that kind of the simplest way to attack that defense?
Well, I think what you said, like, we're going to do what we do, but obviously when you look at as much as we have on Creighton, and I'm sure Creighton has done the same with us, right, in terms of preparation, you try to implement what you do well and also take a look at your opponent, see where there may be, I don't know if holes is the answer, but where maybe you can gain an advantage. They're a really good defensive team as well. They've ranked in the top 25 all year. So they're just solid as a rock. But we looked at everything that we thought that is good with our personnel, and we're going to try to maximize that during this game. And as the game goes along, obviously you got to find a flow and a rhythm to see what you want to do based upon what they're doing defensively.
You know, John mentioned Kalkbrenner, and this is just one in a long line of elite bigs that Tennessee has faced this year. You know, it started back in Maui with Edie and Hunter Dickinson, then in conference with Tolu Smith, Armando Bacot, back in non-conference, and then Jani Broome. I mean, it just goes on and on. It's I don't remember a season in recent memory where we've seen so many talented bigs. And Kalkbrenner's a different beast altogether, in that he's, you know, pretty good rim protector. Saw him shoot a really clutch three against Oregon, so he's comfortable doing that. I mean, this has been, talk about a kind of a heavy-duty tutorial this season for Jonas. He's and he's responded pretty well, I would say. So that matchup, if it's Kalkbrenner going out to the perimeter, I mean, does that, from a defensive standpoint, does that set Tennessee back, or do you guys just feel there's, you know, you guys are probably planning adjustments for that? I mean, I don't want to have you try to expose your game plans to us, but I would be interested to hear that, because that's a different kind of look. I guess we saw some of it with Dickinson too.
Yeah, so kind of a combination of what you just said, of, you know, not quite as big as Zach Edey, but he's big. That is a big man, very fluid. Very good score, obviously, in the paint. Gives him a presence. And it seems now he's expanded his game out to the three-point line. They surround him with four other shooters, so they make it very difficult to, you know, help off of him a great deal. We're going to have to mix some things up and, again, find the flow of this game and, you know, be ready to make some adjustments, but also, you know, not lose our identity to what we do and who we are.
Talking with Tennessee men's assistant basketball coach Greg Polinsky. Coach, what has been the most rewarding part so far of this run to the Sweet 16?
For me, it's always what joy and extending the great careers of Santi, Josiah, Zakai, you know, obviously those guys are juniors, but that probably, to see the joy those guys have after a win, knowing that, hey, any game could be their last game. I think that is where I get great satisfaction, as well as our fans waiting for us at the hotel. You know, we have unbelievable fans that support this group, make them feel appreciated. Can't say enough about that at games. You know, I just, maybe, again, I always laugh, you know, as they get older, maybe a little corny, you know, but it's special being at Tennessee. And I think each player knows that, especially the older guys. So that would be my answer to it, you know. I love seeing this ride continue for these guys.
It does hit me in the feels a little bit, seeing the pictures that come out of you and Josiah embracing and seeing the love there. With all that being said, Coach, I know we talk about one game at a time and every game's the same and, you know, you're just trying to be focused. But, like, when you talk about the release and the excitement of winning these games, like, the pressure goes up and these games, do they feel different this week than they did last week?
Yes and no. To say that it's not, like, more exciting, or that there's not, that you use the word pressure, and we talk about this, you know, and this isn't my statement. I saw this somewhere. You guys might even know that the term, you know, pressure is a privilege.
Right.
You know, it really is. And we may have talked about that even on the show. It's so... What is pressure? You know, I mean, I had a coach one time that told me he was a fighter pilot in Korea, and we missed a bunch of one-on-ones. That's when I was playing. That's how old this comment is. Somebody said something about, you know, well, maybe he felt a little pressure, and he said, hey, pressure is when you're 30,000 feet up and someone's shooting at you. Free throws? So, perspective, right? But at the same time, this is a goal. You know, we'd love to continue on and win the big trophy. So, obviously, you got to take it step by step here, and we've got a tremendous challenge in Creighton. But I think at each juncture, each step, you feel a little more. I'll use the term juice. That God, we're taking another step, and you know, the excitement builds a little bit, and pressure. I wouldn't say that. You know, I think it's the joy of you know, playing basketball and this opportunity to do something special. That's where I think we, you know, I'd leave it with our group.
You know, I've never been 35,000 feet in the air getting shot at, but
me either.
I was there with my hands in my head, coach, when I watched the ball get inbounded to Adu as he had to step up and shoot the 1-1, and you know, he knocked them down 3 of 4 in the last couple minutes and really helped Tennessee keep that lead. But what's the process like there in the late game inbounding? Because to me, you know, an observer from the outside, I'm like, man, that seems like a bad decision, getting the ball to your big man, who's, you know, not the best free throw shooter. But you also, you obviously don't want a 5-second call, and you want to get the ball in. So, like, what's the process there? Is it like, hey, here's option one. If it's not open, get it to anybody? Or how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, we have an out-of-bounds play we ran, and they did a great job of taking away our best free throw shooters. Texas played great defensively. You know, Coach Terry worked with Coach Barnes, you know, for 9 years or so. So he probably had some idea. They're scouting who we got, our personnel. There was some talk of maybe just putting in 5 guards, you know, our best free throw shooters. But at the end of the day, if for some reason you throw the ball away, it gets deflected, they go on offense. It's a good feeling having Jonas in there around the rim. So it was a tough decision, but at the end of the day, it worked out. And I would also tell you, we have confidence in Jonas. I know the numbers. You could say, look, you got to be kidding. Your season, you know, what he shot in conference play, or what he, but Jonas is a good shooter. And look, he stepped up and made 2 clutch free throws.
Sticking with the bigs, I have one more question for you, Coach, and that's regarding Tobe Awaka. And we were watching the game last weekend, and I'm thinking ahead again. This kind of ties into my question about working against a lot of elite bigs over the course of the season and what could lie ahead this coming weekend. And it centers around kind of the elephant in the room with him, and that's fouls, because he played with so much energy against Texas and was such a force offensively to start that game. But then, you know, a couple of the fouls that he drew had to be frustrating for him and for the team and the coaches. Got to believe that's something you guys continue to talk about with him, but it, you know, it just seems sometimes in these tournament games, you just don't know what kind of whistle there's going to be with the refs too.
Yeah.
For someone like him, that's such a touchy topic. You don't want to tamp down his energy level too much, but how do you counter that?
Well, we talk about smart fouls, and that sounds kind of a contradiction, right, of terms, but good fouls, let's say, for Tobe are going after an offensive rebound. Hey, if you dive on the floor and you're both, you know, grappling for the ball and there's a foul, you do a great block out, but the referee thinks it's too physical. What we got to avoid is the ones in the post where he wraps guys up, you know, like puts his hands, and we work on it, you know, but in the moment, sometimes guys are physical. Tobe responds with physicality, just being a little more basketball IQ aware of what teams might be trying to bait you into, those type of things. But just getting him to understand what is a good foul, because they're meaning, look, these are effort fouls. We'll accept this, but let's not get these knick-knack or these ones that you can absolutely avoid.
I feel like we've been doing this long enough. We're kind of friends now, Coach, so I'm asking you as a friend, not necessarily as an insider and putting you out there, but like, do you have any indication after we win on Friday if we'll be the early game or late game on Sunday? Because my flight's at like 9 o'clock out of Detroit on Sunday night, and I need to know if I need to have a contingency plan.
I want to leave that as a giant question mark for you. That means that we have something to really talk about in Detroit. And, you know, as obviously our entire focus is on Creighton. So I don't think we care what time we play if we can get to Sunday. But I do think those are more day games. But I could be wrong. I hadn't even looked at it, guys.
Well, yeah, I know it's either 2 o'clock, it's either 2:20 or 5:50. But that's a big difference when my flight's at 9. But it's fine. I won't bog you down with that worry. Coach, I'll handle it. No big deal.
Coach, I appreciate you caring about the game and not John's travel plans.
Just, you know, we're friends now. It's my boy G-Rag.
Hey,
you know, I just say, you know.
Yeah, you got it, fellas. Exactly.
All right,
feel the same way, fellas.
On the way out. The one biggest key to victory for Tennessee against Creighton on Friday is what?
I'll give you two things. We've got to get back in transition, and obviously Creighton knows that. Whether we can do it or not is to be seen, and we got to make some shots. I mean, it sounds simple, but that's it. I mean, there's other things you got to do with Creighton, but if you don't take care of getting back on defense, you won't be able to play half-court defense against them. They're that good. And then we've got to put the ball in the basket.
It is that simple sometimes. We're at the point now where everyone's good. It just comes down to who can make shots and who can execute. Coach, I hope that is us this weekend. Really appreciate your time every week. It's been nice growing with you and going on this journey. Hopefully we're celebrating next week, getting ready for the Final Four. Have a great trip to Detroit. Best of luck, and I'll see you.
Thank you, guys.
Good luck, Coach.
All right, appreciate you.
Yeah, man.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Do you think he considers me a friend now that I've put it out there?
Go down to the sidelines if you can.
Z-Rex!
Yeah. Hey, man.
I made it!
Like right in the middle of the
game. I'm here!
Like right in the middle of the game. Yeah.
You need a timeout.
Yeah, during a timeout.
Pick and roll! Remember what we talked about! Pick and roll!
Carpenter, he's slipping on that.
Yeah. He's going under. Shoot it. Tell Dalton to shoot.
Or even do like, hey, coach, I found out. Actually, the game's on Sunday.
2:20 if we win. I'll just stick with my usual. Rebound. That's what I love yelling during the games.
Oh, my God.
I'm like the older women in Neyland Stadium that just yells, tackle! Get him!
Get him!
That's me during basketball. Rebound! Get the ball! Box out! G-Reg!
Oh, that's funny.
Last call on the other side as we get through the rest of this Thursday show. The madness getting ready to pick back up. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
It's time to remix the clap.
I don't want to bet, but my father wrote a check that I bet his ass could never cash.
This segment's brought to you by Inward Half. I've been telling you about their great apparel. Got my Inward Half hoodie ready for the flight tomorrow morning. I'm going to be balled up. Inward Half. .com. You can check out their spring 24 line. And also, if the Vol Club has any more of those everything polos, buy one of those. That supports Inward Half and the boys. A win-win. Inward Half has transformed golf apparel. It's comfortable. You can get by wearing it every day. It just looks nice when you're wearing it. And it looks great on the golf course. It feels great. Smooth and light. InwardHalf.com. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Let's grab Roberto. Roberto, top of the morning to you.
Hey, John. Great to hear your voice this morning. I got to admit, I was rocking around my house cracking up just now. My wife's like, what are you laughing about? When you were yelling G-Reg and you guys were talking about what you're going to do tomorrow night after we win or during a timeout, that had me rolling. That was great stuff.
G-Reg!
Greg Polinsky is an awesome interview. I loved how he gave you nothing while giving you everything. I thought that was beautiful.
It's me, Greg. It's John from the morning show.
Hey. I mean, he was honest. He was honest, and I thought, but, you know, he wasn't going to give the pick and roll away, was he?
No, I mean, there's only so much he's going to be able to be willing to tell us. I mean, he could probably is able to do whatever. I don't know if Tennessee would like that, but yeah. I like the more of the personal stuff that he shares more than the X's and O's. He kind of keeps that close to the vest.
No doubt. And that's what we want. We want our coaches to be personalized, and he loves it here. You could tell he's one of the dudes that loves it here. He thinks he's hit a gold mine getting to be an assistant here, and I love that for him too. I want to tell you about crying in sports really quick. I'll try to be brief. Have you guys seen the video of the guy at the Alabama game last year sobbing? A lady was taking the video, and she said it to the Celine Dion song from Titanic. Have you seen this?
No.
From 2022?
Yeah, I'm sorry, last year. Yeah, 2 years ago. Yes.
I believe I have. I think I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, we hit Barstool. That's Matt. He sits beside me at football games. I'm actually in that video with some others, and every one of us was sobbing like babies. And I don't know why, but it was like it was so cathartic. John, were you at that game?
I was at the game, but I just had joy. Like, no tears, just elation.
But I think it was, but sometimes joy, like anger, you get angry tears, and that's great. That shows the emotions you hold inside. You know, and joy is something, as a Vols fan, we've had to hold inside for a long, long time because we don't have much of it. That was cathartic, and it felt like we were David and we had just slayed Goliath. And I think that's what everybody was feeling in that moment. I cried in that. I'm not going to lie. Sobbed.
I think a lot of people did, and I had friends who cried too, and the tears of joy phenomenon is real. I mean, many people have it. I just don't think I've ever experienced it. I've been happy plenty of times. I was elated that night. Just no tears fell.
Happy and joy is different, John. They're two different emotions.
Maybe.
Happy is circumstantial. Joy is forever or never.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's the difference is I didn't have joy. I just had happiness because I was like, okay, got to keep it rolling. Got to go down to Georgia now and win. The stakes are higher. Maybe that was it. Maybe you're right.
This segment of
Dr. I mean,
Phil.
You're clearly a man of business. You stand on business, John. I'll stand on my joy. Also, John, if you need, I've got the name of a great therapist. God bless you, boys. Have a safe trip, John.
Appreciate it. Better help.
Felt like we were in the middle of a Dr. Phil show for a second there, talking about joy and happiness and the differences.
So he said, happiness is circumstantial.
Yeah.
And joy is what? Joy comes from within. Is that what he said? Is that the second part of that?
Something
pretty
like that.
Much, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he said he cried tears of joy, and the joy came from the circumstance of winning. So, like, I don't really know if I'm following along here.
I think tears of joy just sounds a little bit
better. Joy sounds way
better.
Tears
of happiness is like, yeah. What did this just say?
Well, joy seems like it comes from your soul, definitely. Joy comes from the soul. But, like, I don't think we'd been crying tears out of our soul if we lost that game. So it was all circumstantial. I don't know. Maybe I'm missing the point there. I've been happy. I was elated. Just not a tears of joy guy. I'm not really a tears of anger guy either. At least I haven't been since, like, junior high. I mean, I used to get pretty worked up out on the farm, you know, arguing with my parents and stuff like that. Like, that gets you pretty upset before you could actually, like, do anything and you felt trapped or whatever, like you couldn't really fight your parents. You're just kind of like, oh, I'm so mad, I'm gonna cry. Like, I don't really cry tears of anger either. I just cry tears of emotion of being touched by movies and TV shows and commercials and songs and dreams and thoughts.
Wow.
I got friends who cry. I got a good friend who I'm going to Detroit with that's got a video of him like blubbering after the Alabama game.
Really?
Yeah, I was like blubbering, like having a full-on like meltdown. Like I've never been overtaken by emotion like that. I don't think it's gonna happen. I'm 99.9% sure it's not gonna happen after we beat Creighton. I'm like 90% sure it won't happen even if we beat Purdue. I don't know.
See, for me, the only time I've had those types of emotions, like in an outcome of a game, was as a Colts fan, and it was when the Colts beat New England, had a massive comeback to beat them to go to the Super Bowl, which they ended up winning. And the Super Bowl was kind of meh. It was nice to win it, but it was that game against New England. That made me tear up because New England had Indy's number forever. and to win that game and the magnitude of it in Indianapolis to go to the Super Bowl. It's probably similar to what a lot of Tennessee fans felt against Alabama.
Sure.
Right?
I mean, were you at the game in Indianapolis?
No, I was here.
Yeah.
I was here in Tennessee.
I was going to say, being in the stadium, I could maybe see myself crying if I'm just hugging people. Like, oh, he finally did it.
Yeah.
Or if you're like with your son or best friend or something.
I don't you think that if Tennessee beats Purdue gets to the Final Four, I think you'll see a lot of emotional people because you said it earlier in the week, Purdue has had Tennessee's number in so many ways.
It doesn't feel anywhere comparable to the block that the Patriots had on the Colts and Tom Brady over Manning, or of course going back to the other conversation earlier in the show of Tennessee Alabama, that
right.
block. Like, it's not that, but like there is hatred for Purdue. But, like, to me, it wouldn't matter to me, really, if it was Purdue or Gonzaga. It'd just be the act of making the Final Four.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd shed tears over the Final Four. I talked about it a little bit earlier this week on a podcast I do. But, like, I could maybe work myself into getting emotional if, like, the Elite Eight game is, like Santiago Vescovi's, like, reemergence, and he scores, ooh, like, 24 points, and he's hitting big shots. And
game
like,
winner?
Yeah, like, maybe, you know, like... Oh. Like, the emotion that goes along with, like, his struggles and, like, coming back. Like, maybe that could get me. Maybe. But, like, that's a storyline thing I always talk about. I'm a storyline guy when it comes to sports. It's not always just about wins and losses for me. It's about what happens before, what leads into it. Like, the Santi struggles would be a big part of that. And just watching, like, them all hug and, like, being there, like, watching them cut down the nets afterwards. That well, actually, I might have to leave. I don't have time to watch the nets get cut. I got to get to my flight. I don't know.
Video it for me, Greg.
Yeah, can you guys just send it to me? Hey, G-Rex!
Need you to record that.
I gotta go!
Get me a piece of that net.
You got room on the plane?
Yeah, okay, so moving ahead, because you're about ready to bounce. When you arrive tomorrow, I looked at the weather forecast. It's going to be 28 degrees.
Mm.
So bundle up.
Excuse me, say that one more time?
28 degrees in Detroit when you get there. Roughly.
Yeah, it's like
well,
still,
actually,
still
you're not flying
places.
Direct. It'll be a little warmer because you got to connect and all that stuff.
Yeah, I don't get there till like 9 o'clock.
Still be cold. But yeah, weather doesn't look bad tomorrow. So, but yeah, be prepared. It's a different kind of cold there.
I hate when people say that.
Yeah. Different kind of cold.
Yeah, like, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying it scares me. It's one of those phrases you don't want to hear.
Yeah.
We need to talk. Different kind of cold. Those two go hand in hand for me. Because I've been at places where they say it's a different kind of cold, and you laugh it off, and then you're like, no, it's actually a much different type of cold.
Yeah, you're right by the lake. And,
yeah.
Yeah, but.
So sweater. I need to pack a sweater.
Yeah. Hat, for sure.
Man, I wore a sweater to the Sweet 16 game last year, and we lost. I don't know if I can run this sweater back.
Inward half.
We're going to hold the fort for you. We'll hold it down tomorrow. We got Will Warren coming on. We got a guy who we couldn't get today, but he's coming on tomorrow from the NBC affiliate in Omaha. He's going to be up. He's up there now. He just got up there covering the game on the Creighton side. So we'll get some info from Clayton Collier, who's going to join us. He worked in Memphis before too, so he's got some Tennessee ties.
Either that, or he hates Tennessee a lot. Like there's like I lived in Memphis. We hate the Vols.
Yeah.
And I'm covering Creighton. I want Creighton to win. I hate the Vols even more.
And give us a call tomorrow because it's otherwise going to be me and Sam. That's, you know.
Two men
just talking.
I did it for a full week. You can survive one day.
You like to talk, though, so you're
yeah, I guess that is true. I do like to talk.
Have a good trip up there, man. That'll be fun.
Yeah, and I'll try to check in maybe in the last – well, you got a jam-packed hour three, though, right? You got both guests and – I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I could try to check in from Detroit, but...
Yeah, just keep in touch. I mean, we'll have an end segment. You never know. Yeah.
Okay, well, hopefully next time I see you guys, we're headed to the Final Four. When I say we, I mean Tennessee, Bob, not Purdue.
I don't disagree. I'm with you.
G.I. Jake Show coming up next. Stay locked in on Fan Run Radio.